Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Gallagher Shots podcast and YouTube channel. We are back with another match preview. I'm Scott. I am your host for this one. And this week, I am joined by Daryl, Andy, and Joe. This week, we are going to take a look at the Bournemouth game. It's on Saturday. It's at St. James's Park, and it's at 3 p.m. We're going to jump right into that in just a minute. But before we do that, here's a word from our sponsor. The Gallagher Shots match preview is brought to you by Magpin. Magpin are the go-to site for high-quality, unofficial enamel pin badges of Newcastle United players, legends, and retro kits. For more information, visit their website at magpinbadges.bigcartel.com.
Right then, so as I've just mentioned, Saturday, 17th of February, 3 p.m. kickoff. It's quite a weird one. We don't get many of those at St. James's Park. We face AFC Bournemouth. They're currently sitting 13th in the Premier League on 27 points. That is 7 wins, 10 defeats and 6 draws. They're on a minus 13 goal difference. That's 13 goals scored and 44 goals conceded. In their last 5, they have had 3 defeats and 2 draws. That's not really a good representation of Bournemouth, though. They're a bit up and down. If you go back just November to December, they are 7 games undefeated in that month. And that was, incidentally, a win against us, 2-0. It also beat Sheffield United, Crystal Palace. They beat Man U, Nottingham Forest, Fulham. And they also drew 2-2 against Aston Villa. So very unpredictable, boys. It could go either way, I think, this one. We're going to look into some detail, and this might be a little bit different to some other match previews that we've done in the past. We're trying some new things. We've got some good feedback from the past couple of ones, so we're going with this a little bit more. Before we jump into all that goodness, I've got a few little pre-match insights and some little tidbits that I'm going to go through, and then we're all going to have a little piece, and then we're going to discuss about Newcastle. So I've got some pre-match insights, some little pub quiz trivia, if you will, before we get started. First of all, Bournemouth are looking to complete their first ever league double over the fabulous Newcastle United. It's their 7th time of asking, but they've never done it yet. So let's hope it'll be the 8th time of asking, or the 9th time, or the 10th time, and they don't get to do that. But they have scored at least once in 14 of their last 15 Premier League games, 26 goals in total. They've only failed to score against Liverpool at home, and that was in January. Away from home, they've scored in the last 8. That's 15 goals in total, which is their longest ever run. So let's hope we can break that record. We currently sit on 51 goals in the Premier League and 24 matches. That's the earliest we've ever done that in the top flight. where we've hit 50 plus goals since 1960-61 season, which only took us 23 games, so we're still not breaking a record.
Remember it well.
We have had nine seasons, or a nine season spread, which was the 2012-2013 to the 2021-2022 season, where we failed to score 50 goals at all in the Premier League. So we're doing okay. And then finally from me, our record against Bournemouth in total, this isn't Premier League, this is obviously Championship and whatever as well, is we've won four, we've lost two, and we've drew two. So let's hope we can turn that to 1-5, lost two, and drew two. Daryl, mate, I've said way too much now. People will be sick of my voice, although it is only 4 minutes coming up to of recording time. Welcome, and also you're going to talk about the last time we played Bournemouth. The stage is yours.
Yes. So, as you mentioned earlier, the last time that we actually played Bournemouth would have been the reverse fixture back in November. But the last time that we played Bournemouth at St James's, we go back to last season now, and it was a 1-1 draw. The goals scored by Bournemouth, who the scoring by Philip Billen, who thankfully will not be playing in this game, as we'll get to later. And then we had an Alexander Isak penalty to equalise later on in the game. Well, actually, not that much later on. Even it was just 5 minutes later on the 67th minute. The penalty was won because Kieran Trippier put a good cross in, and it was judged to have struck the hand of Jefferson Lerma. And the VAR review then adjudged that the penalty should be awarded. And Alexander Isak converted that penalty by putting it to the goalkeeper's right at the Leeds' end. The goal that Bournemouth scored, to just step back a little bit there, the Philip Billen goal, sort of came against the run of play at that point in the game, and it caught Nick Pope out at his near post with a volley. But again, we came through that game. It was actually the first game after the death of Queen Elizabeth II. So I remember reading the reviews at the time that the atmosphere was quite subdued, and obviously as it would be back then, remembering the death, remembering the life of a monarch and commemorating her life, and it's almost felt as though priorities weren't in, or when it wasn't proper for the priorities to be where they were at that time. So it was an interesting game. As you know, a record against Bournemouth is a little bit funny. I mean, if you just go in, you mentioned the overall record there, Scott, before. If we just look at the Premier League at St James's, it's 1-2, drawn 1 and lost 2. So that draw last season was the first time we drew against Bournemouth at home in the league. And as I am with you, I hope we turn that into 3 wins and 1 draw and 2 losses.
Absolutely. Andy, mate, obviously, I mentioned before there that going back to November, they did beat us 2-0 at their ground. It wasn't that long ago, so we don't really know what to expect because of the run they're on, but you've been looking into the opposition a little bit. What have you been finding about Bournemouth, or not finding, as the case may be?
Yeah, I was going to say, anyone who tries to find content on Bournemouth is fighting a bit of a losing battle, really, which is a bit unfair on them because they've been around and established in the league for so long now. They've always played pretty good stuff. Obviously, Eddie Howe's got a big part to play in that. I tried to sort of think about what my opinion of Bournemouth, what I thought Bournemouth fans would be thinking before looking into it. And I would have thought Bournemouth fans would be pretty positive with how things have gone. They've obviously had a few changes of manager. I think the most recent change they weren't expecting. But I watched a video of fans being interviewed outside the ground at Fulham. They just lost to Fulham. And they were quite negative, which was quite surprising. Mm. And I don't know if that was just because you come out of a game and you're always just raging and you just want to sort of shout at the world. Yeah, exactly. We all have. We did it at Bournemouth, didn't we? We were absolutely fuming after that. But at the minute, from what they were saying, it was a good selection. It was maybe like 6 or 7 different fans from lots of different age ranges and places in the world. And they're just getting a bit tetchy at the moment. They had a really good start to the season. Like you said, they had an amazing run of fixtures where they were winning and winning, and they beat Man United 3-0 away from home, where they absolutely battered them. But now there was one fan in particular, he said, "We're no longer looking up the table, we're actually starting to look down again." Mm. They're only 8 points clear, which in seasons past, Bournemouth fans would probably be loving that, but I think they're just getting a bit titchy now. Luton have started winning, Forest looking a bit better, so they're a bit worried. In terms of the football, a lot of them were saying that they're still playing good stuff, but they're just not quite at the races. They're a bit wasteful in front of goal. Solanke's obviously been sort of carrying the goal scoring. And generally, they just feel like they're being a bit wasteful. Similar to probably what we've been like, maybe not recently, but obviously over that winter period where we just weren't quite there and we were struggling a little bit. The one observation that they made for the Fulham game is that they had 13 corners, didn't score from any of them, didn't create any chances at all. Two of the goals they conceded was because Bournemouth players basically slipped over. And it's almost just like they're in that period of the season where they're all just shrugging the shoulders. So their next two games are us and Man City. But when you look at the games they've got after us, you can kind of see why they're treating this as a bit of a free hit. So after those games, they've got Burnley, Sheffield United, Luton, Wolves, Everton, Palace, Luton. So I think they're just wanting to get these next two games out the way, and then they can hopefully go on another amazing run. But they'll definitely be confident based on the last game. Just briefly, tactically, because there isn't an awful lot on them. They play a 4-2-3-1, similar to Forest. Generally, it's the same back four: Neto, Smith, Zabanini. I think he's new signing from this season. Senesi, Kelly, the Holden two is Cook and Christie, who they describe as workhorses, pretty similar to Forrest's midfield last week, I think. And then obviously Solanke starts up top pretty much every single game, or to have a striker who doesn't get injured. And then the three behind that tends to chop and change. It's Semenyo, Clivert, Tavernier, Scott, Sinisterra in one description or another. So I think it's going to be similar tactically to Forrest. I think they'll try and get in behind our midfield. They'll try and swamp the midfield if they can. They do apparently do a bit of a, I haven't seen much of Bournemouth, but apparently they do like a high press. But I think that's something we benefit from. So it'll be interesting to see what they do at our place. So interesting tactical matchup. They haven't really rotated for the whole season. I know Joe's going to go into more about the players themselves, but I think they're very much just seeing this as, let's go to St. James's, try and get a result. If not, if we don't win, whatever. And I think that's probably the right attitude to have if you're a Bournemouth fan going into this.
So what you're saying there, Andy, is keep the pitch dry and give them lots of corners. Is that what I'm getting from that? Yeah. Cool, yeah. Okay. So the groundsmen just need to keep the sprinklers off, and the weather needs
a few Mario Kart bananas on the pitch.
Yeah. People need to put their slick studs in. And not the blades. Okay, right. We'll do that. Joe. So as Andy's mentioned, you're gonna do a little something new. We're trying in the match preview. We're gonna take a little look at maybe a head to head. Or you're gonna compare,
yes,
kind of a Bournemouth player to a Newcastle player and how they maybe will stack up against each other in the game at the weekend.
Yep, absolutely. I'm gonna do a head to head, and this week we're gonna look at two of the most informed forwards in the league this season, being Gordon versus Solanke. Both have made 23 appearances. Gordon has had 7 goals, whereas Solanke's had 13. But, you know, Gordon does have more assists. He's got 5 as opposed to Solanke, who's got 2. So they're quite comparable with that. I mean, obviously you would expect that, I suppose, that difference with Gordon playing out on the wing more, with Solanke being more of an out-and-out striker. One thing I did find quite interesting was that Gordon has 6 of his 7 goals at home, whereas Solanke seems to be a little bit more balanced, with 7 of his 13 being away from home. For those stat nerds amongst you, for Gordon, that's about 0.57 goal involvements per 90 minutes, and it's 0.66 for Solanke. So slightly more, but, you know, very comparable.
To interrupt you. Does that mean that Gordon's only away goal was Sheffield United?
Because
that's mad. If that's mad, that's obviously true. Yeah. Sorry, oh, wow. that's blown my mind.
Yeah. What a goal it was, by the way.
Cracking. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
It's all right. Yeah, so Gordon does have slightly more, creativity on his side. He's got just over 1 key pass per 90 minutes, and Solanke has just under. And obviously he has more successful dribbles than Solanke. But I suppose what we want to do is look at the key play styles between both of these players and see how they stack up. Now, the reason why I wanted to talk about Gordon specifically is because, as we know, Isak and Wilson are almost certainly going to be out for this game. Wilson's suffered his 57th injury of the season, and Isak is fantastic, but, you know, his groin's made out of glass or whatever it is. So chances are Gordon is going to be starting in the middle here. I would not be surprised if he is flanked then by the likes of Murphy and Barnes or Almiron, whatever it might be. But regardless of whether he plays out wide or in the centre, one thing that Gordon does love to do is have the ability to draw fullbacks and exploit that space in behind. And that's been absolutely pivotal this season. You look at whether he's been playing out on the wing or in the centre, what he does is he feigns his movement and he uses that manipulation of his body to be able to draw that space, both for him and to bring the midfielders into play. Now, so you look at that and think, okay, that's great. But then if he's up front, he's going to have to be clinical. And actually, his shot accuracy this season is 45%, and he's got about a 25% conversion rate. So one in every four shots is going in. So, I mean, for someone who's technically a winger, I'd say that's a really good conversion rate. And, you know, it shows that he's got that in his locker when he's up front on his own. And he's, you know, he's not actually too shy on holding players up as well. You know, the likes of what Wilson's been so praised for as well this this season, last season, Gordon actually has the ability to hold up the ball and bring more players into play. So he's got that in his locker. But as well as that, obviously we've seen he loves to make those runs in behind. And I just think that he's so versatile that wherever you put him on that front line, he's going to do a really good job and be effective. Now, so what I would say, thing to watch for Gordon is that movement off the ball, his ability to trick defenders. Just keep an eye on it and watch what he does. Now, we'll move on to Solanke. Different player. So he's more of an out-and-out striker. He is probably someone that Alan Shearer is absolutely adoring right now as a current striker in the Premier League. His goals, he's a poacher, target man. He loves those runs in behind. He seems to have a little bit of everything. If you look at his goals this season, a lot of them are those kind of poachers inside, like inside the box, instinctive finishes, latching onto those loose balls, taking chances and gambling. So, I mean, Alan Shearer said himself that those are the best kind of strikers, those who take that gamble and can read the game. I mean, look, a perfect example of this is his goal against us this season. So he was making that run, and then I think it was one of our defenders ended up accidentally like knocking it into the path, but he was there to pounce on it and scored. And if you look at his goals this season, so many of them have been that. But as well as that, he is very good at heading as well. His aerial presence is fantastic. So that is something we're going to have to look out for. But yeah, he's a really deft poacher in the 18-yard box. And we need to really try and avoid giving him that space and stop the crosses coming in to the box. So it's going to be an interesting battle between the two, obviously. Likelihood is they're not going to see much of each other on the actual pitch. But looking at the different play styles and how they're going to try and work the box, work the defenders, it's going to be interesting to watch the two of them.
Yeah, and hopefully it's Anthony Gordon who is the victor of the two. If we're looking at from a head to head point of view. Yeah, I mean, I agree about Solanke. It's to coin a phrase from a Wayne Gretzky, or to put a spin on it, he does kind of run to where he thinks the ball is going to be, as opposed to running towards the ball or expecting where the ball is, you know, wanting the ball to be at him. He's anticipating the mistake of a defender, and he's, you know, he's not just waiting to get to the defender. And we'll turn our attention to injuries, because there are a few, and obviously, you know, Joe, you've mentioned a big talking point from our side. We'll just cover both teams together. So for Bournemouth side, lads, we've got James Hill, who is out injured. Tyler Adams is 50-50, and I think they've got a couple of season-long injuries, or, you know, longer injuries in Ryan Fredericks and Max Ahrens, who I didn't realise they'd signed. I thought he was still at Norwich, but Max Ahrens, but he's out. And then they've also got, as Daryl mentioned earlier, Philip Billing, who was suspended. So that is always a plus, because I think he's quite a pivotal part of their team. Yeah. And then obviously for us, I'm not going to go through all of them, but we've got Callum Wilson, who, you know, if we couldn't have imagined any other part of the body that a player could get injured for Newcastle United, CM De Jong has returned from the Netherlands and thought, hang on, lads, I've got a part of the body that I know can be injured, and it is the right or left pec or left tit or whatever it is he's pulled. So it just can't, just doesn't get any worse.
I'm sick of it. Is it?
It's an absolute nightmare.
It's so poor. It's really unlucky, isn't it? I say it's unlucky. It's some of these players, I mean, I think of the likes of Jack Wilshere is a really good example of players who, whilst when they're playing, they're so prolific in many teams would adore to have them, but they can't stay fit. And it's not like it's a reoccurring thing. There seems to be issues all over the shop. It's a real shame because he is a great player and he's been fantastic for us. Especially even during the Bruce era, you know, he was latching on to so much that was like.
So which body parts have we had injured now then? So we've had two spines, a toe, a brain. I'm sure Shah's had a head injury at one point. We've had left.
Shah has a head injury every game, man.
What did Pope do? Pope broke his hand. We've had two dislocations.
Yeah, shoulder. Yeah.
it's like we're having a game of operation.
Eyes, mouth, nose, head, shoulders, knees, and toes. There's a song somewhere going on. Yeah. I mean, it's.
Alvin Barnes did his foot, didn't he? Something did his toe.
We've had illness.
This podcast will go on for like about 2 hours. We're going to go through every injury. It's crazy, man.
I'm waiting for a chipped tooth. It was Jamal Lascelles, wasn't it? A couple of seasons ago, who lost a tooth mid game.
He got concussed. Play against
that
Trambia.
Interview was hilarious after the
just
game.
Sat there with a big towel on him.
I think Wilson had one of them as well, actually, didn't he? He had a tooth.
It was Wilson. Yeah.
But the point is, we're just like, we kind of catch a break. And Pua Gordon, I mean, as if we didn't love him enough already, we're now shoehorning him into a number nine and saying, do what you do again. But I mean, whenever he's gone there, he's looked fine. I think Howe knows he can't just stand as a number nine like Solanke. He's got to go and roam and get the ball deep and run at people, similar to what Isak does. So, I mean, I love him. If he gets in there and he ends up being the number nine, we might end up saying we don't need another number nine because he'll take the nine shirt off Wilson and go and play there full time.
But do you think that was the intentions of, you know, the summer and possibly the January transfer window of us not bringing in a striker, but we've saw Gordon do that job for the England youth setup in the tournament in the summer, doing quite well there. Obviously, he did play on the wings as well for the international side, but he did fill in that number nine role when needed. So maybe the club thought, you know what, with FFP being as tight as it is, we've got a player that can do a job there if needed.
Yep.
They obviously never banked on needing it, but...
I think they probably banked on that as well as having Joe Linton as a backup as well, just in case.
To play on the left to cover.
Don't forget that Barnes and Murphy were just about ready to come back as well, which they have done. So you've got that backup on the wings if needed. It's one of the man strikers are at a premium in any window in any respect. And you look at this in the January window with how desperate we are. You're going to absolutely bust the bank if you try and bring in a good striker. And you've got to think as well what the long term plan is with the likes of Wilson too. If you're expecting him to maybe go in the summer or next summer, there's going to be a strategy in place for replacing him right. I mean, you could do another thing with Chris, like a Chris Wood, where you bring in a temporary stopgap, but we saw how much that cost. And we were lucky to get is what we... Yeah, literally. You know, and I think we're at a stage where we really need to be thinking about these long-term replacements coming in.
We need a young and through.
We do.
Yeah, that's exactly what we need. And either whether it comes from our youth team at the moment or we buy someone, you know, I know there was the whole Etiquette saga. Was it last summer, the summer before? I don't know when it was when he decided to go to PSG last minute. It was 2 years ago.
January, the first window.
But, you know, it is what it is, and we are here. And I do want to stress, we are recording this before the Eddie Howe press conferences, although this will probably be going out.
Not that that means anything. Come on.
Yeah, of course it means.
Yeah, as we found out last week, it doesn't matter what Eddie Howe says.
Nelson's fine.
It doesn't matter.
Eddie Howe, we don't know what's happening with Callum Wilson. Isak could start on Saturday, for all we know, because we cannot trust the thing the man says.
Like Dan Ashworth up front for one last hurrah.
Yeah, see what happens. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about Newcastle. Obviously, we're coming off, the injury to Callum Wilson, which it's probably going to put a bit of a dampener on pretty much anything that we've got looking forward to this game, to be honest, because we don't have an out-and-out striker. So I think expectations might be a bit subdued for people going into this game. Although it is Bournemouth, you know, like I've said, they're completely unpredictable. Daryl, mate, what's your opinions on the lineup? Is it as is, but obviously the change up front, or do you make any changes anywhere else in the pitch?
I think the temptation might be there to change up something in midfield, but again, that'll depend on availability. We saw that tactical alteration to the game plan against Nottingham Forest where Kieran Trippier was stepping into midfield at times to partner Lewis Miley, who was sitting deeper than usual. And then at times again, if it wasn't Trippier, it was Sean Longstaff would drop in again alongside Miley, and Kieran Trippier would push right away up the wing, which would then bring McGee inside behind Callum Wilson at that point. But for me, I think it's just that one change, and that's just to replace Wilson. I think we were a hot topic in the group chat earlier in the week that, you know, we have goals coming from all over the place in this squad. So, well, I think, what is it, the third best in Europe, I think?
Joint,
maybe,
joint top.
We were in the joint top. Three, yeah.
Yeah. So,
joint top,
you know,
Napoli and someone else.
Is it Bayern?
Bayern Munich, yeah.
So
he's not kidding, you know, got 35 goals or something.
But yeah, so there are goals in this team, and we only have to go as far back as last week to say that you had Bruno with two and Fabian Scher just scoring for fun yet again. Maybe he's the answer.
To be fair on that stat, we have fielded the most number of players of any other team in the league as well, I'd imagine. So, you know, you can take that
that's
step with
true,
a pinch of salt,
hey,
and look at it that way.
They've still got to put it in the back
but
of the net.
Scoring. So. They're still scoring, yeah. Absolutely.
So they're doing the job in that respect. So, you know, I think there's still a confidence is high. And, you know, Harvey Barnes has come back and he had that goal in his first game back against Luton when he equalised. So there's definitely goals in the team. And, it, you know, as much as we will miss the effect of having a Wilson and Isak up front, I'm still quite confident that we'll be able to score regardless because of how we play.
Yeah. Andy, mate... obviously, there was a lot of criticism for Lewis Miley in the last game that he maybe didn't have the best of games in the middle against Forest. But we saw in the counter game against Forest that Bruno didn't have the best of games against Forest when, you know, when they did the number on us. Mm. Is this a game for Miley where you think, do you know what, actually he could turn back and actually have a good performance against Bournemouth and reinstate maybe a bit of faith into him in that holding midfield role?
Yeah, I think this was one of the first times we'd seen Miley try to sort of hold up the midfield on his own, because he obviously went into that deeper midfield position, had Trippier alongside him for definitely the first half, but for large parts of the game, he was being asked to dictate everything. We obviously pushed Bruno further forward. So maybe it was just one of those games where Miley's obviously, I mean, so inexperienced anyway.
Yeah.
And we maybe just... we've almost sort of taken that experience that he's had this season away by putting him in a different position. So I don't think he was horrible against Forest. I think it was just one of those games where he is still a kid.
If he has,
you know, one bad game out of five for a 17, 18-year-old, that's absolutely sensational. So he's shown his worth. And, you know, Daryl makes an amazing point about the amount of goals all across the team. I mean, Miley's got goals as well. You know, and we made that, obviously made that comparison between Solanke and Gordon. If they're without Solanke, the attack almost dies. Whereas with those, it's like, well, do you know what? We've got a centre-back who's more prolific than a lot of strikers in the Premier League. Surprised Dubravka hasn't banged one in yet. So, Miley, I think there's going to be those moments, but I think most fans, you know, they're sensible enough to know that if he has an off game, he's slightly out of position, he plays a loose pass, you know, we're not going to get on his back, and we know the manager's not going to get us back. And to be fair, we can't afford to get on his back because there's no one else. So we're going to have to just keep backing him.
I do want to stress, I'm not criticising Miley.
He
did come across some criticism over the weekend.
Well, he got caught for that goal, didn't he? He got caught for that goal, didn't he? He jumped forward a bit, but I think whoever was in that position at that point would have done the same thing, because that's the ethos of the team, isn't it? So, I think we'll probably similar midfield, and I think he'll have a good game.
Joe, mate, given how prolific Fabian Scher is in front of goal, would you start him up front and just play three in the back?
I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, of course you do it, right?
What kind of a question is that, of course?
I didn't even realise that needed to be said. Yeah, I mean, when I was saying Gordon was playing central, I meant, you know, as a 4-4-2 up top with big Fabian.
You know, oh, like Ferguson and Shearer.
Yeah. Or even Ferguson, big Duncan Shearer, yeah. Honestly, you know what it is? No, it's right. The sort of breadth of goals that we have across the team, it's still something we're getting used to. I think as a club, we've had that the last couple of seasons where we've seen it. I think, was it Shelby one season under Bruce that finished as top goal scorer? You know, we're used to seeing these goals come from across the pitch.
It may have been seven or eight goals. It wasn't that many, was it?
It was something horrendous. But you never got I think even Longstaff, correct me if I'm wrong, he's got something like six goals a season, perhaps in all competitions, but that's I think that's his most prolific season so far. And he's obviously taken that advice from Shearer and running with it. You know, he's doing really well. So no, it's really good to see. And I think when we talk about goals, we have to obviously look at the front line. And I would say that this game is probably the most unpredictable for predicting the front three in terms of who's going to start, because Barnes has come on and we've seen what he can do. He's a very, very controlling winger. We've said it. He dictates the play. He dictates the pace. And obviously, he's got a keen eye for goal. You've got Murphy, who is an absolute pace machine and has shown his quality time and time again as an out-and-out winger who is a right-footed winger on the right-hand side. You know, who would have thought? But then, inverted to that, you've got Miggy, who divides a bit of opinion, but you know, at the end of the day, he has shown quality and he's been a mainstay in the team. So you look at those and you think, well, who is going to start? Who is going to be best to partner Gordon in that central role if that does happen? So yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I think likelihood is probably Murphy will make way for Almiron if we're judging by Eddie Howe's past record, but.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think it's all up for grabs, and it's nice to have a. There you go. Back, Daryl. Play a bit of musical chairs, huh? But no, it's nice to finally have a bit of competition. You know, we've suffered. We've suffered in midfield. We've suffered at the back.
I'm just thinking we can't afford another injury if Daryl's just dropped off. He's done his best now as well.
I know we need to talk about the referees. We'll do that in a minute. Yes, it's nice to just have options. Nice to just have this discussion, because in the past match preview, just like, well, the lineup's going to be the same again. Right, moving on. Yep.
Now to see.
So, speaking of referees, Daryl, who's the person in charge? I'm not going to say man, because it could be a woman, it could be a man, it could be an alien, who knows? Who is the person in charge?
Okay, so in the middle on Saturday, we will have Michael Salisbury of Preston in Lancashire. It's his first Newcastle game of this 23-24 season. His fourth Newcastle match in his career as a man in the middle. And I am going to say man because I'm pretty sure we can all assume he's a man. So I'm going to hit you with a bit of a negative start to the statistics surrounding Mr. Salisbury. And we are yet to win a game in which he has taken charge. And that includes two FA Cup games, and that is last season's loss to Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough, and then the previous season's loss to Cambridge United at home. And in between those two games, we had last season's 0-0 home draw with Crystal Palace, which, as we all remember, Joe Willock had a goal disallowed after he was pushed in the back. And he ended up spearheading into the referee. Was it spearheading into the goalkeeper and taking the goalkeeper out? So we all remember that one. So I don't know. Can we blame Salisbury for that? I'm not sure. I think it might be down to the VAR official who decided to call him back over. But yeah, so we'll go on to Michael Salisbury's season stats for this season. He's had quite a quiet season compared to most of the referees that we've come across this season so far. So he's actually only officiated 9 Premier League games so far. And when you think of how many Premier League games there have been in total since the start of the season, that's a very small amount compared to the others. In those nine games,
it's a championship for dodgy decisions.
I had a look to see if he'd been selected for. So I did have a look. I did do a little bit of a deep dive to see if he'd been relegated to championship or football, the rest of the football league, even. And I couldn't find any record of him officiating in the football league. So it is interesting. I think he might have spent a lot of time in the VAR room this season for one reason or another. Whether or not he's had an injury, should have been using him in an off the field role. Who knows? But yeah, in those nine games that he has officiated this season, we've seen 34 yellow cards and 2 red cards. So he's, you know, he average it out over in the nine games.
Bruno's been on 9 yellow cards for 3 seasons now, and he's this is when it all ends.
I hope not, because I don't want Bruno to miss Arsenal next week. Jesus, God, imagine.
I only have one question about the ref, because this is one of these refs I cannot picture this guy at all. Is he bald? Because the bald refs are always bad, and
he's not bald.
A bit better, right? Okay,
he's not bald. But that doesn't mean anything, considering we've never won a game he's been refereeing.
So, first time for everything.
That's true.
Well, that's it. So he's those 34 yellow cards and 2 red. So it's what, just over three, maybe 4 yellow cards per game that he's got
How
there.
How many blue cards?
0.
We don't talk about blue cards in this channel, Andy.
So we'll see what he has to do, and hopefully the VAR won't screw him over again like it did last time against Crystal Palace.
Well, fingers crossed VAR doesn't need to get involved at all at the weekend, but we can talk about whether we think it is or not, because it's time to come to our predictions. Joe, mate, as you're so beautifully lit in that room of yours, I'm going to come to
really
you
am.
First.
I feel like I'm in some kind of halo. I don't know what's going on.
You're like, it's like the beginning of Mr. Bean. I feel like you're just about to be like absorbed into the ceiling.
Well, I don't know. Because it's a really tough one, isn't it? You know what it is? I'm just going to say, I think we're going to win 2-1. I really think Solanke is going to be such a difficult player to try and keep quiet, but we're bringing a good amount of form back. Bournemouth, they're patchy away from home. I think that we've got those options off the bench now, and I think we're going to come into this with a good amount of confidence. We've had a really good start of 2024. And whilst parts of both Luton and Forest were questionable and do show some, I suppose, still issues that we need to work on, especially with regards to the defence, I think we're getting our mojo back, and we're going to continue our impressive home form, and we're going to run out 2-1 winners.
Nice. Darryl, mate, we'll come back to you.
Yeah, well, I'm still haunted by the Luton game in the 4-4. It absolutely has my life thinking about this game, because it's almost in a similar sort of fashion. But I do agree with Joe, and I do think that we'll run out 2-1 winners. In terms, I might even try and give you some goals here. I think I agree. I think Solanke might just bag another one for Bournemouth. And for us, he's in a bit of a rich vein of form after that game against Forest. I fancy Bruno to get another one. And I'm going to say, why not? Let's have Anthony Gordon get one as well.
How many celebrations for Bruno if he scores?
6.
12. He's getting them all
2 yellow cards.
Yep.
Mine get 3.
Andy, mate, what's your predictions for this one?
Well, I'm rubbish at predictions, so I spoke to a lad at work called Chris, and I said, what's your prediction? He said 3-1 Newcastle, so I'm just going to say that, because I've been absolutely terrible at these predictions. But but he said that before I'd obviously heard what you gentlemen had to say, and I think that backs up, I think, what you've all said. There's going to be goals in it. I think Bournemouth will play without a lot of fear. I think they know there's better games coming up for them. I think we've definitely got goals in us at both ends. So I think it'll be more of the same again. I think we've just got to start strong and get a win. And hopefully I'm wrong, and it's more like the Bournemouth game from last season at home, because I do not remember that game at all. So if it could be a very forgettable 1-0 win, that would be great. We'll go 3-1.
If I remember rightly, wasn't that like Isak's last game before he went out with injury until like February or something?
Probably.
It was something daft. He was missing after that for a while.
It wouldn't be a Newcastle game if someone didn't get injured after scoring. So. Just, you probably
Bruno might trip over the advertising awnings and get injured.
Well, you might as well get a yellow card on his way out.
I was going to say, yeah.
Well, I've got some good news. It's four wins. It's a four-win prediction week. I think we did that last week, but I'm not 100%. I can't remember, but I think we did. But yeah, there was one of those pre-match insights I nearly wrote down, but I didn't bother, was that if we concede three goals this week, it's the first time ever that we've conceded three or more goals in 4 weeks in a row at home. So I'm not going to go for three. I think it'll be 3-2. I think it'll be high scoring. I think it'll be a horrible game. I think they're going to press quite high, and I think we've struggled at late. Teams are presses quite high, so I think they would have seen the Luton game. They would have took a lot from that. They would have seen the Forest game. I think they're going to bring the game to it, but I think we're going to just maybe have a bit too much for them. I think they'll get tired. I don't think they'll be able to keep it up for the entire match. In second half, we'll take it to them. I do think they'll take the lead. I think maybe they'll take a 2-goal lead, maybe. But I think second half, we'll come back and, we'll get three in the second half. So it'll be 2-0 half-time at Bournemouth, 3-2, finished Newcastle.
Boring one, eh?
A nice boring 3 o'clock kickoff that isn't going to be on the telly. And if that's any excuse to get rid of the blackout, this will be the game to get rid of the blackout so that everyone can watch that game in years to come. And I'm going for an Anthony Gordon hat-trick.
Ooh. Wow.
And a brace from Solanke. There you go. Whoa. I'm not the Oracle. I'm just making a prediction. I'm not the Oracle.
Triple captain.
That's fine because I need to catch you in the Gallagher Shots members FPL table.
Ooh, nice little segue, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. So yeah, what do you think the score is going to be? What is your prediction? What is your lineups? What have we missed on Bournemouth because we couldn't find anything? Andy struggled, so let us know in the comments below if there's anything we missed, and let us know what you think about this new format. Do you like it? Do you not? Do you want us to go back to the old way? We probably won't, but let me know anyway, because I've quite enjoyed this one. I thought it was good. Let us know everything that you think in the bottom. While you're down there making your comments, just hit the little thumbs up button. That's all we ask. This gets this video into the feeds of other Newcastle and Bournemouth fans. And if you want to get more videos from us, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, and you will get more videos from us in your feed, as well as notifications when new videos go live. If you listen on the audio, just give us a 5-star rating on whichever platform you are listening to us on. And that gets us up the charts in those respective podcast charts. If you want to go one step further, like I mentioned before, there is a membership program that gets you early access to videos, that gets you exclusive access to videos as well, and it also gets you access to the Telegram group and the Discord server. A whole host of content on this channel currently available as well. We're always pumping out new stuff. There's a FIFA video just gone live, as well as these match previews. You've also got the Over Smiling Faces podcast. Canny Chat us back next week. There's also going to be match reactions, more match previews, all of that good stuff. But this has been the match preview for Bournemouth. I've been joined by Daryl, Joe, and Andy. Lads, thanks a lot for your time. I understand it's late for me. It's nearly 10 o'clock. It's late for you. It's nearly 9 o'clock.
My bedtime.
Hope you've all enjoyed it. Thanks for your time for joining us. Thanks for your time for watching, listening, however you've been consuming this. I've been Scott, I've been your host, and we will see you all in the next one. Bye, everyone. Lads.
Bye.
Podcast Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.